All right, welcome back, everyone. It is good to have everybody back for another chapter in the Remarkable Writer's Workshop. And today we're going to talk about metaphor, we're going to talk about imagery, and we're going to talk about storytelling. And we just touched on this before we started recording, but these are very large topics. But these are some ways that you're going to be able to just start to play around with them and start to use them more in your work. I'm interested just to check in on how people are feeling about homework slash assignments slash the studio journal. Have you been able to make time to get into the studio journal? We've just come off of a holiday, so a lot of times that really shakes up habits in a way that's not that's not useful. So if you've been able to make some daily time, that's great. If not, this is a wonderful time of year to just circle back, start opening the journal again. Always feel free to just noodle around in there. You can use it as a diary to just record your thoughts. You can definitely, doing your daily five is a great way to get in frequently. Reading for pleasure, if you have kind of reactions to something that you're reading, things you want to copy down are always good. And then another component to the daily work is if you have time and it works for you, we're always happy to have you in co-working. If you click that schedule tab, you've got your workshop homepage. There's a tab that says schedule on that menu bar, and that'll always take you to co-working for the week. So we're always glad to have you if you want some writing time. That's a kind of a good place if the time zone works to get your writing done. All right, so that's homework. And also, before we officially start, I want to remind you really cannot get behind in the writer's workshop because these are individual pieces that you can use ongoing in your writing. So you could spend like 6 or 8 weeks or 2 months or 3 months or 6 months on literally any one of these lessons. For example, today you could just say, I'm going to spend a couple of months working more metaphors into my work, using more imagery and telling more stories. And that would be very worthwhile. So if you miss a session or you want to kind of save a session for later, that's always fine. And, you can really squeeze a ton out of any one of these, and then the rest of them are just there for you when you're ready for them. So don't ever feel like you're behind because you really can't get behind in this kind of work. Writing is so much about working on a skill or a technique for a while and then adding more as they work for you. All right, let's keep it going. So let's talk about why do we include this as a dedicated workshop in the Remarkable Writers Workshop? Why is metaphor, imagery, storytelling, why are these important? And these are some of the really core cornerstone elements of human-focused language. Now, in 2024, these are really very much effectively ways you can compete with AI. AI does not have experiences, therefore, it cannot tell stories that are really resonant. It doesn't have feelings, it doesn't have senses. It can copy other people's stories. It can, in a lot of cases, plagiarize other people's experiences, but it can't tell its own stories. It can't tell its own jokes. And so, as we are seeing lots more AI content in the world, books are being written by AI, content is being written by AI, Instagram channels, there was just a story about a Instagram influencer who has a whole bunch of followers, and she's totally fictional, right? She's just totally a machine. But she's not very interesting. And so this is about creating human-focused content, not just because, robots are bad and humans are good, but because that's what human beings are going to want to read. And more, it's really my strong belief, if you can tell human-focused stories in a human-focused way, even if it's not perfect, even if it's not polished, people are going to want to, they're just going to be more attracted to that. They're going to be more interested in that as opposed to the absolutely polished AI perfect kind of content. And it's not that you can't use AI. AI can be really useful to for brainstorming. It can be really useful for getting things organized. It also can be really, useful for repurposing your own work. So it's not that AI is bad, but it does not tend to produce work that's all that interesting, especially written work. It produces some very interesting visual content. I would argue that's because it's really doing a lot of plagiarism, but that's a content. That's a topic for another day. So, I'm really feeling the pain for my visual artist friends because it's tough right now. But we writers really can compete with the robots because we can produce work that is more interesting, and this is part of how we do that. So we're going to start off with metaphors, analogies. There are a lot of words that are used to describe this thing, this figure of speech, and it just means taking two things that are not the same and making them the same. We use them all the time. They're a very human way of thinking. And a lot of times we'll use them to get a handle on something that is kind of complicated or kind of abstract. So we'll just unpack exactly what these are. It is not important if you call it a metaphor or an analogy, or if it's this is like that, it's called a simile. The word you use is not important at all. What we want to think about is just that idea of taking two things that are different and then comparing them in order to illustrate a point or to make something more clear. So they're very, very useful. They're also very interesting. They do interesting things to your reader's brain, your podcast listener's brain. And so that's why we use them. We use them because they're vivid and they're interesting and they're very engaging. So here's an example. The moon hung in the sky like a sign for beer. This was an example used by my creative writing teacher way back when I was in college. That was a really long time ago. That was like around 40 years ago. And I still remember this example because it's so interesting, right? So there's the moon. The moon has been in the sky since, before there was life on Earth. And then there's a sign for beer. That's very kind of 20th century, 21st century. It's just very, very vivid. It's very interesting. It's very memorable. It kind of sets a stage because we're sort of thinking like this would be like a really good first line of like a noir mystery novel, right? We're a sign for beer. Where is a sign for beer? Well, it's in a bar and it's probably not in a fancy bar. So maybe we're not in a fancy part of town. All of a sudden, we're kind of in a much more interesting place than just saying the moon hung in the sky and it was bright and shiny. That's not interesting, right? We'll never remember that. But the moon hung in the sky like a sign for beer. It's very bright. It's very visible. It's probably more like a full moon because it's shining like a neon sign. So anything can connect to anything else. Although I am going to give you a couple of rules of thumb for how to put these together in a memorable way. But you can compare anything to anything. You can compare parenting to a pomegranate. You can compare what you do for a living to anything. Now there are some that are used all the time. So I've written them, maybe you've written them, Your topic is probably more like a marathon than like a sprint, because most things are more like a marathon than they're like a sprint. Your topic is probably like building a house. You want to build a foundation, and then you want to put up the walls, and then you want to put up the roof. Your topic is probably like growing a garden, right? You do some work up front, and then you have to give it some time and some attention before it's going to yield, a crop. So those are some very, very tried and true metaphors. They get used all the time. I've used them myself. They're great. However, I think that our biggest payoff comes from finding some metaphors that are a little less commonly used. So I mentioned like parenting is like a pomegranate, right? And well, how is parenting like a pomegranate? And then you could come up with a lot of different ways. In fact, I would invite you, even whether you have kids or not, I know some of you do, some of you don't. How would you think parenting would be like a pomegranate? How would those two things be similar? They're very dissimilar, right, on the surface. But in what ways are they the same? And that's how we build a metaphor, is we look for ways, two things that are not the same, but how could they be the same? And I'll share some ideas I had when I was putting, updating this slide deck with you in a little bit. And if you have some, I'd love to hear them. Exactly, Patrick, it elicits an emotion. And metaphors and all kinds of analogies are really good at sparking complex emotions, because they're associations. Our brain is thinking about these associations, and that makes it sticky. And we're going to talk exactly about evocative language, imagery, in a couple of minutes, because evocative language is just easier to remember. So, anybody who ever saw the movie Shrek, a very fine animated film, there's a point in the movie when the protagonist of that movie is an ogre, and he's done something that maybe is a little different than what the other character expected, and he says that's because ogres are like onions. We have layers. It's not all available on the surface. You have to get past the surface to the deeper layers. So that is a simile, that is an analogy. Ogres are like onions, they have layers, right? And his interlocutor, the other character, the donkey, is like, what do you want to be like an onion for? Like onions are stinky. And a lot of people don't care for onions. There's all kinds of problems with onions. What if you were like parfait? Parfaits have layers. Everybody loves parfaits, right? Everybody loves a parfait. That's a great example of an idea that things are not always the way they are on the surface, that sometimes you have to go deeper than the surface to uncover the deeper layers. Two different metaphors for the same idea. Donkey has done something. We're going to do this together next week. He has rewritten the cliche. A person having layers like an onion is a pretty commonly used metaphor. It has become, I would say, a cliche at this point. That scene is memorable because Donkey rewrote the cliche. What else has layers? Well, a parfait has layers. Parfait is very desirable. And in fact, in that story, the ogre is very like very sharp, very strong. There's a strong indication the ogre doesn't smell that good. The ogre is more like an onion, and the donkey is more like a parfait. The donkey is very sweet, the donkey is very charming, the donkey is very likable, everybody loves the donkey. The donkey is more like a parfait, the ogre is more like an onion. So you can choose different metaphors, and they can spark other associations that A, make that image memorable, literally like 0.1% of the population would remember that scene in Shrek if Shrek had just said, ogres like onions. We have a lot of layers. You have to dig deeper. It's not all on the surface. When the donkey character talked about being like a parfait, that made that scene really memorable. Where you can see that movie and 20 years later, you might remember that line about, everybody loves parfaits. So that is the power of metaphor. Because you're introducing more sensory details, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, you're making it more memorable and more sticky, and sometimes you can make it easier to understand. Now, I would recommend when you are constructing metaphors, and that will, spoiler alert, be on your homework. We are going to craft some metaphors or analogies for our own work that we do in the world. It's good to have. If one side is abstract, then at least one side should be in the real world. One side should be something someone could just very easily visualize, ideally with multiple senses. We're going to talk about that. It just makes it easier to understand. So if you're going to say that, like, Keynesian economics is like quantum mechanics, that's going to be a metaphor that for most audiences is not going to stick because they don't really understand either one. They're both kind of abstract and they're both kind of hard to visualize. So keep anchor one side in something that's just very memorable and easy to understand. It's going to make your metaphor more memorable. It's going to make your me metaphor, it's going to allow you to tie more abstract concepts if you have more abstraction in your space. And abstraction, honestly, is just anything your audience doesn't 100% get. So, obviously, abstraction, some things are concrete and some things are abstract. But if your audience is a little fuzzy on the details about how your topic works, anchor it to something they totally get. They just totally understand. And that will help them remember some of those fuzzy details in your topic. And the less alike your two sides are in your analogy, the cooler it is. So the more you have to kind of stretch to make the point, actually, the more fun and memorable it is. A donkey is really not anything like a parfait. I mean, a donkey doesn't smell that much better than an onion does, quite frankly. And they're very different. One's in the animal kingdom, one is a kind of food. One makes noise, one does not make noise. They're really different. And yet, the more of a leap it is, the more fun it is. So, the more of a stretch, kind of the better. As long as you find those points of intersection. Nobody really looks at a donkey and is thinking about a parfait. But that's what makes it fun, is the stretch, the leap, that logical leap is what makes it enjoyable. And so the analogy post. I want to talk about something that we used at Copyblogger a lot. In fact, we used it so much, and then we got copied so often that it became a little overused. And we dialed it back a tiny bit, but it still works. And that was to say that like one of our topics, like content marketing or email marketing or being, a thought leader, was like something else. We usually went with like a pop cult reference. So we used Eminem, the rapper Eminem. We used Madonna. I wrote one about, is your blog more like Marianne or more like Ginger from Gilligan's Island? The young people will not get that one at all. But when I was growing up, Gilligan's Island was on reruns like three or four times a day. And so everybody had that as a point of reference. I used Firefly to go much more, sort of obscure. It's a cult science fiction show. It only had a small audience, but the audience it had was willing to go to war. Brian Clark, who was running Copyblogger, was my boss at that point, kind of didn't want to run it because he's like, nobody's ever heard of this show. And he trusted me, so I'm very grateful that he trusted me. And it got a monster amount of traffic because, again, the people who loved the show were really majorly passionate about loving that show. It was only one season long. It was really, really well written. It was an early Joss Whedon show and great show. If you haven't seen the show, you should see the show. And, it was a big hit. But I also structured that post so that even if you had never seen the show, the examples would still make sense. Okay, so I contrasted like the two main characters of the show. You have kind of the ostensible protagonist, Mel, and then you have his second in command. And they had very different leadership styles, and I contrasted the leadership styles. But you can also use, you can really use anything. There was a culture critic, many decades ago, who used to say that everything in the world can be divided into is it French or is it German? And some parts of Germany are kind of more French, and some parts of France are more Germany. So you can use this for anything. It's great for categories. It's great for, what Greek god are you for anybody who's watching the new Percy Jackson show, which is really a lot of fun. Which Greek god are you? Which demigod are you? Are you a son of Zeus or are you a son of Athena? So analogy posts are great where you take your topic, what you want to write about, your piece of content, and you tie it to something else. And it could be, starting a business is like a pomegranate, or it could be starting a business is like Taylor Swift's career. Okay. You can tie it to anything. And it's really, really good, strong, fun, memorable, readable, interesting way to organize your topic and make a larger point about what you want to say. So, part of our homework this week is going to be to make five of these connections between what you want to write about and something that might be very, very different. So, my topic is like, now you can certainly go with my topic is like a marathon, my topic is like a garden, my topic is like building a house. You can use one of the tried and trues. That can be a good way to just start the exercise and get some practice in. But I would invite you, see if you can find something less obvious. Or, for example, if you want to say, well, starting a business is like building a house, the tried and true is you have to build the foundation first, then you build the walls, you put the roof on, and then you do the final finish work. Are there some other ways your topic is like building a house that are less obvious? That's going to make your analogy more memorable. So I'm going to give you, I just put some, popped some examples up here. Of course, all of this is going to be on the class notes, so you don't have to frantically write anything down. But if you want to do a screenshot, you certainly could. But these are some examples of analogies that you could use for your own work. So, love is like oxygen, cheesy pop song of the 1970s. If it's not an earworm already running in your head, you get too much, you get too high, not enough, and you're going to die. Okay, so that's a simile, right? We use the word like. This is like that. Now, another kind of analogy is a metaphor where you just say, this is that. Time is money. War is hell. That classically is a metaphor. And even no man is an island. So that's a poem by John Donne, right? And it's an extended metaphor about human beings don't work like islands work, right? We're not isolated. Isolated comes from the word for island, isola. Well, how is no man like an island? How are we not like islands? How are we different? So that is a metaphor. It's a little stronger, like just rhetorically, it's a little stronger than using like, but it does not matter. Go with whatever feels right to you. Another metaphor, one bad apple spoils the barrel. So that's a metaphor about how if you allow bad behavior, like for example, corruption, if you allow one person to be corrupt, that is going to spread, and then pretty soon everybody's going to be corrupt, right? So that's a very potent metaphor. We still use it today. It's still very insightful. It's widely ignored where people will take somebody corrupt and say, well, that person was just one bad apple. Well, actually, one bad apple spoils the whole barrel. It's contagious. So bad behavior is contagious. Life is like a box of chocolates, probably the most memorable line from Forrest Gump. Metaphors are memorable. They stick in your reader's mind and they make your work and your ideas more memorable. Some of them are so memorable we've kind of forgotten their metaphors. Ogres are like onions, donkeys are like parfaits. Right? That's another nice thing you can do is you can have categories, and you can say, are you more like an onion or are you more like a parfait? It's another really nice way you can construct a piece of writing. So my idea about parenting is like a pomegranate might be that it all looks like smooth and perfect on the outside, but once you crack it open, it's always messy and it's always complicated. So that might be a way that parenting is like a pomegranate. And you could even use that in a piece of writing and then wrap up the piece of writing by saying, it's messy and it's complicated, but it's also really sweet and rewarding if you stick with it. So, when you put the work in, you really get something very rewarding and wonderful out of it. But you could come up with your own analogy about parenting or anything else might be like a pomegranate. So we were kind of touching on this, and it's part of what makes metaphors sticky is that they are evocative. We say they are evocative. Well, the word evocative, some people don't even like to use the word evocative because it's really like, well, what are we evoking? And what is being evoked when we use a metaphor? What is being evoked when we tie something abstract to something very concrete? Is we are engaging the senses. So if you, we'll talk about this more next week. If you have ever studied like improving your memory, okay? If you've ever read a book about, how do people remember like a whole deck of cards? Or how do you remember vocabulary if you're learning a language? Or how do you remember, the different things in organic chemistry, notoriously difficult class, because it's a massive memory challenge. Okay, and some people have really good memories and some people have really poor memories. Some people have these seemingly photographic memories, right? Having a good memory is associated with attaching different senses to one another. So people who have synesthesia, they see the color red and they smell, like not necessarily apples. They might smell like burning sulfur when they see the color red. Those people tend to have very, very good memories because when something is linked with a surprising other sense, it lingers in the memory. It gets coded in your memory. So when we use a metaphor, when we tie one thing to something that is not like that thing, what you'll tend to do is fire off a lot of synapses that engage surprising senses, and that tends to make something more memorable. Okay, donkeys do not smell or look anything like parfaits, and because of that, it's a very memorable analogy. So the easiest sense to trigger in a piece of writing is visuals. And that's why when we talk about evocative writing, when we talk about, details in writing, a lot of times imagery is just used as a synonym for more evocative writing. When I say a color word, when I say blue, most people will kind of have a flash of blue that fires off in their head. You might have a mind picture of blue, but you definitely have something going on with the word blue. Now, I say definitely, but it's not definitely. Not everybody thinks visually. Some people are really not strong visual thinkers. Most people are. There's a really big hunk of your brain that's devoted to visual processing. Most human beings are visual, but of course, not everybody can see, right? So if you're blind, that part of your brain gets mapped to other stuff. Other senses. And just some people don't call up word pictures. They just don't. Not everybody does. Not everybody can visualize. So this tends to be the easiest sense to trigger, but it is not universal. So I think it's always worth using visual language in your writing because it will make it more memorable for most people. But I also really advise you to include other senses in your writing because sensory combinations are more memorable than single senses are. If you can associate a taste, a touch, a smell, hearing to your language, it's going to be easier to remember. It's just going to stand out more in that person's mind. It's also just going to be more vivid to read because they've got more stuff firing off, literally more kinds of synapses firing off, right? Our brains map out. We have part of your brain is mapped to processing smell. You probably have experienced yourself or have heard that smell is very strongly associated with memory. Perfumes, maybe they're just parked next to each other in the brain. I don't know, but it's most people's brains do work that way. Your sense of smell is strongly associated with memory, and smells evoke memory. But sounds, theme songs, it's why they use theme songs for podcasts and TV shows. You hear the theme song and you're kind of back in that world and you're ready for that. You're ready for some more of that content. It's why couples have a lot of couples have a song. It's associated with like when they were courting. And when they hear the song, they have the feelings again from courting. So senses make writing more engaging, more vivid, more memorable. They make it more enjoyable. And when you can use your human brain to come up with sensory language that maybe we haven't seen before, we haven't felt before, we haven't smelled before, that's going to make you stand out for that reader. It's going to make the process of engaging with your work just more enjoyable. Yeah, the Burger King theme song. I sing the Fig Newton theme song like once a week. I don't know why. It's stuck in my head. I haven't heard the Fig Newton theme song for like probably 50 years, but it's still in my head. These things are very, very sticky, and they're enjoyable. As humans, we like them. We like that kind of stickiness. It makes it fun and enjoyable. So when you pair an analogy with something that is going to fire off those sensory synapses, you're really coming up with something that will tend to stick in the mind. It is a pairing like wine and cheese, right? That is, of course, an analogy. When your metaphors engage some senses, they really, really become more memorable, more unique to you, and more fun. So, he had a personality like burned toast. That's going to be something that's going to really stick with you. Because it's burned toast has a very, very identifiable smell, which is not very pleasant, and taste, which is also not very pleasant, and also like a texture, like that grating kind of raspy texture, not very pleasant. So if somebody has a personality like burned toast, at best, this is going to be a very acquired taste. And next week, we are going to dive more into that in the detail and polish session, where we're going to really get into physical details, sensory details, and observing them and including them. So this week, it's kind of about using imagery in a metaphoric sense. If you're going to tie something to, having a personality like burnt toast is real different from having a personality like applesauce, right? So we're using the sensory associations to make that more rich and more fun and more interesting to read. And then next week we're going to talk about observed details, where you're just going around the world and you're observing like what your toothpaste looks like and what your dog feels like and what your shoes, maybe smell like, I don't know. So you can use those details in a literal way. And you can also use them in a metaphorical way. And they're great both ways. Lots of richness added to your writing by including more of the senses. All right, looking good. So we have a little bit of a break. Let me know if this like makes sense, if you're not 100% sure how to handle it. If you're already using like metaphors and analogies in your writing, please do drop them in the chat. I would love to know more about it. It is one of those, it is literally a trick writers learn to make their writing more memorable. And once you know the trick and start to practice it, you will just instantly be able to make your writing more interesting. And you know, boy, did we use that trick at CopyBlogger. I will, so I'll tell you before we break a little secret that we learned, because we had for a long time, you know, the Eminem playbook for writing better blog posts, or the Madonna secret to, I don't even know what it was attached to. I mentioned we used that so often, and then it was copied so much, people got really sick of it, and they kind of stopped clicking. I think we're safe now. I think it's safe to come. I think the shark has swum to other waters, and we can now do that. Oh, Pierre, coming out of the corporate world, I feel like I'm at the entrance of Candyland. I love it. Yes, extend that. That would be a great. That'd be a great analogy. So you could definitely say the Taylor Swift guide to running a bike shop. For sure. You could absolutely do that. What you can also do if in your space that's overdone is you can just use a whole bunch of Taylor Swift examples and even maybe a Taylor Swift picture. You know, on the blog post or on the podcast or whatever, but you might not put Taylor Swift in the headline. You might use a synonym for Taylor Swift, like the Mega Pop Star Guidebook to running a successful guide bike shop. And then you could use examples from Beyonce or Taylor Swift or anybody else who would be a good example for your person. Again, the waters are probably safe now, and you could probably just go ahead and do it. But we did go through a time at CopyBlogger where we had to not put it in the headline because people were like, ugh, already read like 20 of these this week. So there's always another way. There's always a way to use your favorite tricks. If they get a little oversaturated, you just shake it up a little bit, shake it off. All right. Well done. Let's take 5 minutes. Come back around 45-minute mark. It's interesting that my Apple Watch and my Apple computer are showing two different times. These are the end times. All right. So do drop in if anything is like you're not sure how to do this, or you're not sure how to approach it, or you feel intimidated. A lot of times people feel intimidated by this exercise. So if so, let me know. We'll get it fixed. But for now, I'm going to stop the recording. Please do get up, stretch your legs. I'm going to go do some jumping jacks, and then we'll come back.